In 1885, a German psychologist spent 7 months memorizing nonsense syllables at himself, alone, metronome paced.
That man is the reason every memory decay chart you've ever seen exists.
One subject, him, and the whole field is still standing on it.
Today we find out what he actually measured, what a very famous integer never actually meant, and why almost none of it survives contact with the paper. Welcome to The Seams Are the Point. I'm Nora.
I'm Desmond. This is episode 1 of 5, and it's the origin story, Ebbinghaus, Miller, and why capacity was never the number you think it is.
5 episodes, building toward one question. What does human memory science actually tell an engineer building memory for an agent?
Today's answer starts with a man who found Byron too interesting to forget properly.
Set the scene. 1885, Hermann Ebbinghaus, 29 years old.
He tried tones first, too cumbersome. He tried digits, unsuitable. Then he tried stanzas of Byron's Don Juan.
And rejected those too.
Because the meanings varied too much. Byron kept meaning things to him, and that was contaminating the data.
So the founding curve of memory science exists, because a man found Byron too interesting to forget on command.
He landed on consonant-vowel-consonant nonsense syllables. 3 sessions a day, roughly 7 months, metronome-paced, one subject, himself.
Now here's the part I got wrong before we started researching this. What does the curve actually plot?
Not recall, savings, how much cheaper relearning was compared to learning it fresh.
So his 24-hour figure, 33.7%.
Is 33.7% savings, not you forgot 70% of it overnight. It's a day later, relearning cost a third less.
That's a statement about residue, not absence.
Recall failure was never the same thing as the memory being gone. That distinction is baked into the instrument from day one, and the corporate training slide decks miss it every time.
The entire foundation of forgetting research rests on 2 subjects, a century and a third apart. The 1985 curve was replicated in 2015 by Jaap Meur and Jury Droes, also N of 1. Droes, a 22-year-old Dutch student, spent about 70 hours relearning. The shape held, but at 31 days, his savings measured 4.1% against Ebbinghaus's 21.1, a 5-fold gap between the only 2 people who have ever properly run this experiment.
Jump forward, 1956, George Miller, Psychological Review.
He opens the paper by saying he's been persecuted by an integer.
The magic number 7.
Which almost nobody in the industry read correctly. He was not describing working memory. The construct didn't exist yet.
Then what was he doing?
He had 2 sevens from 2 completely unrelated literatures. Absolute judgment of a single stimulus dimension topped out around 2.6 bits. Immediate memory span ran about 7 items.
2 different 7s.
His actual thesis was the dissociation between them. Absolute judgment is constant in bits. Span is constant in chunks, regardless of how much information each chunk holds.
And the shared number.
He calls it a coincidence and moves on. He never defines plus or minus 2 anywhere in the paper.
So the title everyone remembers is the joke, and the finding everyone forgot is the argument.
Psychology spent 70 years building on the part he was joking about.
Go and read the magical number 7, plus or minus 2 in full. The phrase in the title never appears as a defined quantity in the body of the paper. 70 years of citation rest on a number Miller dismissed as coincidental.
This is where it gets useful for us. Cowan revised the 7 down to about 4.
And gets misread the exact same way Miller did. Cowan's 4 is a lower bound, measured under conditions designed to block chunking and rehearsal, the strategies people actually use in real tasks.
So it's a bottleneck estimate.
Not an operating capacity, and even the container framing is contested. Mar Hussein and Bayes, 2014, argue capacity is a shared resource spread across items, not fixed slots.
So adding items degrades the fidelity of everything, rather than dropping items outright. None of these are numbers we can put in a config file.
Correct, but there's one claim underneath all of it that is precise, and it's the one worth keeping.
Say it.
Capacity is invariant to the information content per unit. A context slot holding a fully resolved, pre-joined record costs the same as one holding a bare id.
That's the first design rule. And notice, it arrives with no number attached.
Which is exactly why it survives, where the numbers didn't.
1974, Baddeley and Hitch. You said this is the experiment that started the modern field.
For the wrong reason, usually. Subjects had to verify statements about letter order while holding up to 8 spoken digits at the same time.
If short-term memory were one unitary store, that should have been catastrophic.
It wasn't. Response time rose about 50% at the heaviest load.
And error rate?
Sat at roughly 5%, refused to move. The model survived by failing to break.
They nearly didn't publish that.
Baddeley said decades later it was still incomplete. But look at what it hands us. Load degrades latency and placekeeping long before it degrades accuracy.
That's a diagnostic. If an agent gets slower and starts losing its place, that's not the same failure as an agent giving you a wrong answer confidently.
Altman, Trafton, and Hambrick, 2014, sharpen that further. Brief interruptions specifically inflate sequence errors, wrong step, repeated step, skipped step, while leaving the quality of work within a step untouched.
So you get a free error taxonomy out of this.
Wrong content inside a step versus lost its place in the procedure. Only the second one should respond to context management changes.
Before we get to filtering, you keep saying the cost driver isn't item count.
It's element interactivity. Sweller's cognitive load theory. 10 independent lookup facts are nearly free. 4 mutually constraining ones are expensive.
Budget on an interactivity score, not on tokens.
Wright and Sweller's own 2019 retrospective walks back 2 things people still get wrong. First, germane load. It used to be treated as a third kind of load that refills whatever space you free up.
And it doesn't.
If it did, total load would stay constant no matter what you did. It doesn't stay constant.
So kill any policy that says, we freed some tokens, let's spend them on enrichment.
Freed capacity isn't a pool you're obligated to refill.
What's the second correction?
Measurement is unsettled. The field's central variable is mostly assessed by asking people how hard something felt. So don't build a cognitive load score for an agent and tune against it. Budget on structural proxies you can actually compute.
Now filtering.
Vogel, McAuliffe, and Machizawa, 2005, Nature. The most useful counterintuitive result in the whole literature.
Go.
Low-capacity individuals can hold more in working memory than high-capacity ones. They encode the irrelevant items too.
So the deficit isn't a smaller container.
It's a leakier admission policy. Spend the budget on the gate, not on enlarging the window.
A scope note the popular retelling drops. The Vogel finding is a conditional inference drawn from an EEG amplitude measure in visual working memory. The original paper hedges accordingly, the industry retelling does not.
Last one, and it's the strangest. Expertise reversal. Kaluga, Ayers, Chandler, and Sweller, 2003.
Worked examples help novices, measurably help, and they make experts measurably worse.
That's not a diminishing return.
It's a sign flip. Guidance that duplicates what you already know is just redundant material you now have to process anyway.
So any always injected SOP, any fixed few-shot block, any static memory preamble.
is net negative on exactly the tasks where your agent is already strong. Untested on agents, as far as we can find. Directly testable, though.
Let's land where we started. Ebbinghaus measured savings, not recall, the memory wasn't gone. Miller's 7 was never a working memory limit, and he never even defines the plus or minus 2. The one claim that actually transfers is that capacity ignores information density, and the one lever that actually matters is filtering, not window size.
An expertise reversal means the fix for a weak agent can be the exact thing breaking a strong one.
None of that required deletion, which is the wrong instinct entirely, and it's next.
Episode 2. There's no delete primitive in human memory. Every mechanism that looks like erasing something turns out, on inspection, to be a change in accessibility.
See you there.